What's good?
Hi.
It's so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
After following you on Instagram for so long, and you know, Reva. I'll let you say your last name.
Reva Butt.
Yeah. So everyone else can say it right. But yeah, we're in Central Park right now, on a rock.
And you have a. There's a lot of bugs.
There are a lot of bugs.
Okay.
Yeah. You look really nice today, though.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You know, I really, like, fuck with your style because you meld Indian fashion and Western fashion, like, flawlessly, you know? I mean, I want to talk about, like, your background and stuff, but, you know, I just have, like, impeccable style, so, yeah. But, yeah, you told me you're from San Jose?
Cupertino, specifically. Yeah.
I'm very familiar.
Yeah.
I think, like, every side of my family lives there.
Really?
Yeah. My mom's side, my dad's side, my stepdad's side. I have high school friends from there.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah.
I didn't know Cupertino was that popping.
Yeah, isn't that where...
Apple is.
Yeah.
Right, but I didn't... I mean, I grew up there, so to me, it was kind of just blending in with everything else. I didn't realize, really, like, the kind of... how big Apple is until I went to college. You know how they always ask you, oh, where are you from? Where are you from? And I was like, oh, I'm from this little town. Like, you probably have never heard of
it. Oh, yeah.
And it was right when Apple was really blowing up. So I was like, oh, I'm from Cupertino. And everyone was like,
right.
Where Apple? Like, where
Apple? Duh, we all know what that is.
I was like, oh, yeah, I guess.
My uncle would, like, drive me around and just point out all the Indians. Like, it was a game or something. I'm like,
yeah.
I see them. Thanks.
Yeah. I grew up very lucky because brown people were, Asian people were a majority.
Yeah, there. Yeah. That's really dope.
Yeah.
So you grew up in Cupertino. Was fashion something you're always into? Or style?
I think it was, but not consciously. I think that I've always wanted to physically represent what I felt like, and that was always, like, a subconscious thing, but it wasn't until, I think until people started pointing out, really, that I really noticed. I remember in college, one of my really good friends since childhood was like, do you remember in seventh grade when you got best dressed? And I was like, no.
That's so cute.
So, and I remember what I wore in seventh grade. I wore this, like, god-awful jeans and this ill-fitted, like, tank top. And it was when those, like, cropped sweater things were still in... I don't know if they were trendy or my mom just made me feel like they were trendy. I'm not sure. But I remember I wore that in seventh grade. So for me to think back, like, okay, that's what I wore, but then think, like, oh, I guess, like, people weren't wearing that at the time. I don't know. So I think it was more of a subconscious thing. And when people started pointing it out to me, I was like, oh, I guess what I dress like or personal style is important to me. And then it was more of a conscious thing. And also, I went to school in Cupertino, so it was very academic focused. So when I was in high school, like, art school wasn't an option. I didn't even know that you could be a stylist.
Right, yeah.
I didn't even know.
I mean, you're Indian. Those aren't the things that are offered to you.
Right, like, it was beyond, or that, I didn't even realize that that's something that you could study or make money off of, or it was, like, a career path. Like, it was just, and it's funny, like, I say this, it was just a hobby, and I use that word specifically because for the longest time, even after I was consciously pursuing fashion and styling and whatever, my parents, yeah, so I think that fashion was just something that's always been a part of me, in that I've always wanted to express myself physically. Like, I like the concept of me being able to express myself without having to say words.
Well, I mean, so people were telling you, you know, that you were well-dressed. When did you kind of realize that that is a form of expression?
I think it was high school.
Bless you. Hare Krishna.
I think it was high school when... I think it's also... Yeah, it was definitely in high school because I've always been curvy. I feel like where I was going to school and stuff, a lot of the Indian women were really petite. So I was hyper conscious of like my body type. And so I never ever, and I mean, Cupertino was in California, so obviously it was always nice outside. So a lot of people in high school were always wearing like really like, you know, cute little booty shorts and like a tank top. I never did that.
Is that something, would your parents be upset if you wore that, or you just...
Yeah. It was a combination. It was like my parents, they're not super conservative, but the way I dress is very like, the way I should dress is very specific to them. Like anything low cut or anything too short, like they feel like embarrassed.
It's all about, Indians are like a lot about appearances too, you know? Yeah,
so it was a combination of them having those views, but also me being conscious of my body type, that made me and forced me to really like kind of wear other things that other people weren't wearing. It wasn't like by choice at first. It was kind of like, well, I don't want to show my body, so how do I like feel cute in clothes that are more covered up or whatever it was. So I wasn't wearing like shorts or tank tops. I was wearing like whatever. I started really wearing like oversized shirts, and I started kind of going in this like androgynous realm, and like there was a lot of like experimenting that was happening. And that's when people started to point out that like, oh, like I love that, or like, oh, that's something that, you know, like only you could pull off. And I was like, what does that even mean? I didn't even know what that was about at first, because for me I was just trying to navigate my body and navigate this like concept of modesty that was instilled in me. So I think high school was really the first time that people pointed it out, and I was like, oh, I guess I do dress differently.
Yeah, I was wearing Indian clothes always. I mean, you know, you go to a function with your parents or your family and you have to wear Indian clothes, but when that kind of, you know, that I have a hard time like bringing my Indian clothes into like my Western wardrobe. Like,
When it's very like binary.
Yeah, sometimes or sometimes it's ill fitting. Like Indian clothes don't always fit you the best, or you have to get it custom made, you know?
It's funny because I think that I grew up in a predominantly Asian community. So even though I was never the token brown person, even though I grew up with so many like brown people, I never mixed the two worlds. Like in high school, I wore very much like Western clothes. And then when I was at home, or going to like functions or whatever, my parents are like socialites. Like they love a good party. So whenever I went to the countless parties, I would wear brown clothes. So, but it's weird that I didn't mix them.
I don't think it's that weird, though, because I feel like when we're younger, we learn that they're, like, two different worlds.
Right.
We act this way with our family, we act this way with our friends,
but they don't. But I think it's odd because I went to school with so many brown people that I still felt that, like, oh, no, like, they're separate, you know?
Yeah.
But yet, there was, and also my friends were all, like, for the most part, like, my really close friends were really brown. And they were also Indian, so we would always like talk about Bollywood, and we had like a Bhangra team, and I was captain, and like, so we had all of that. But I remember distinctly, even though our Bhangra team was really good and the whole school knew that, and we would perform at like Culture Day and like everyone knew about them, even then there were moments that I had when we were performing or when we were practicing that I felt a little like embarrassed, and I'm not sure why, but I remember feeling embarrassed for how brown I was, even though my environment was so brown. So
that's,
I can't even imagine if I grew up in like a predominantly white environment how I would feel. But I think it wasn't until much later that I felt really comfortable mixing the two worlds.
Is that like during college or like post college?
It was after I graduated. Yeah, it was after I graduated. I think high school and college are weird places, and it's a lot of figuring out yourself. And then you enter the real world and you're like, holy shit, nothing prepared me for this.
Listen.
Yeah. Just like, oh, wait, what?
This was like way worse than what y'all said.
Like, wait, all those regressions I did, like, in class, like, did not prepare me for this.
Right. Can I go back to college now? So, you went to college in...
In SoCal, in Irvine.
Okay.
Yeah, so... Again, super Asian.
Oh, okay.
Clearly a theme. I think because I grew up in a predominantly Asian environment, like, that was my comfort zone.
Yeah.
So I remember I was choosing between schools, and at the time, Santa Barbara was really white. And I remember my parents wanted me to go there. My brother actually ended up going there. But to me, it was just so crazy to be in an environment where I was the token brown girl. But I ended up choosing Irvine because it was really Asian.
It's not that bad being the token, you know. It's okay.
I just have, like, fear. Like, I have, like, this, like, ever-present fear. Like, because it ended up happening when I came here, like, at work and things. And I studied abroad, and very much there, I was, like, tokenized. And it's odd. It's odd when you're not used to it, too.
Yeah, definitely. So you, after school, you said you were... comfortable before you came to New York, you're like, had a very comfortable life. Are you still in California?
Yeah, so I moved back home to the Bay after college, and I was starting to go to law school. And I took the LSAT, I was applying to schools and things like that. And then just a bunch of series of events happened in my personal life that were like someone passed away, my brother got really sick, just a bunch of things that happened in a short amount of time that made me really reevaluate what I wanted. And I think I've always wanted to make sustainable change, and I thought that when you're in school, it's very linear. It can seem very linear sometimes, like your career and your options and things. So I always thought law was the only way to do that. And when I graduated, I quickly realized that that's not true at all. So...
Well, what kind of law were you...
So the way that law school, from what I remember, works is that you just apply to law school. And then I think in your first year, you like decide like what kind of law you want to do. But for me, I wanted to go in like wanting to do like nonprofit work and things like that.
Yeah.
But law school is so expensive that... Everyone I talked to was like, that's cute in theory.
That's cute. Damn.
In theory, but a lot of people take the cushiony job right after school because to pay off their debt.
Yeah.
And then it's such good money that they like don't ever leave.
Yeah.
So there was just a lot of that. And then also I just was like, I don't know if that like law school life is for me. So then I told my parents, like, I want to do fashion.
How did that go over?
They're like, that's cute. Like, that's a cute hobby.
Right, yeah.
You know, great, but, like...
That's a nice thought.
Yeah, like, that's a cute thought, but let's keep it there.
So then, how did you end up in New York?
I always say I failed forward for 2 years-ish. Right after I graduated, I did a lot of trying things that I thought I would want or that I thought were appealing, and then quickly learned that, like, that wasn't it, and then changed. So, like, tried the studying for law, like, thought about law school, was like, no, this isn't for me. Then I went into a more sales and marketing role at, like, a big company, and that wasn't it. Then I went into, then I actually did a coding course, and I actually was, like, trying to be an engineer, and I was actually really good, but then I got super, a lot of imposter syndrome, because that, especially in Silicon Valley, it's, like, really white, and that, too, like, white bro. So I felt like, because I didn't have a traditional CS background, a lot of the people that I was interviewing with were kind of like assholes, basically. And that kind of just didn't make me feel good, didn't make me feel smart, even though I was one of the best in my class. Like, it just they kept pigeonholing me because I looked a certain way. So I ended up pivoting into product
Yeah.
Which is the career that I'm still with. And I ended up in New York because I took an internship at Glossier.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So do you work there now, or?
No, so I have moved. I have transitioned to two jobs since. So right now I work at a company called Conan Theory. I'm a product manager, producer, and that's like my day job.
Yeah. Does that, so then on your off time, you're a stylist?
Yeah, so I really moved to New York to pursue my creative because in the Bay, I felt like there was, I don't know if this is still the case, but at the time I felt like there was a threshold of how much growth I could do.
Yeah.
There weren't that many opportunities, or people even, like brown people I felt, that, or that I knew that were doing. Yeah, so me and my roommate, well, she's not my roommate, but we went to school together, and after we graduated, we both moved to the Bay, and she was pursuing film, and I was pursuing fashion things, but we didn't really know what that meant or entailed. It was just a feeling, and so we didn't know what the fuck we were doing. We didn't, like, Instagram was still relatively new at the time. We kind of, like, would go out, and she would have a camera, and I would kind of, like, I'll style myself or, you know, whatever, and we would take pictures, and that's kind of how it started. But very quickly realized that I didn't want to go in, like, a blogger influencer route. For me personally, it didn't feel fulfilling. So I kind of started pivoting to, like, how do I use style to talk about important things that are important to me? And obviously my identity was important to me. So then it really kind of pushed me to, okay, like, I'm into fashion, but, like, how do we talk about identity through style? Like, and it started with, you know, the jeans, the shirt, the Indian jewelry, and then it kind of has been a process of, like, it's not so binary.
I mean, your shirt says Gundi on it. Sorry, I just noticed.
Yeah, it says Gundi. It's shout out to Natasha Sumanth. It's her line. But I think through style, I've really had to reconcile my identity and what that means to me. Yes, I'm South Asian. Yes, I'm Indian, but I'm also American. And I'm actually both. So how do you say that through your what you're wearing or your mannerisms or your, you know, like, how do you say that through physical expression? And it's been a journey of figuring that out. I'm still figuring that out, but I would like to think it's a little more seamless now. And that's kind of how I got into styling.
Yeah, and you style my homie, Anique. Yeah. Which is funny. I found y'all independent of each other.
Anique's dope.
But yeah, so how long have you been here for?
A little over 2 years.
Okay. In that time, it seems like you've really, you know, found your groove at least.
Yeah. I didn't know anyone when I moved here, which is insane.
That is crazy. You didn't know anyone in New York?
I mean, I knew people through, like, Instagram or, like, the internet or, Tumblr was big. At least I liked it. I love Tumblr. Yes, I knew people through the internet, but I had never met them, and they didn't owe me anything, per se. It was just like, oh, I know people that are kind of into the same things, so let me take a chance. So I moved here, and actually moved here for 3 months, hated it, moved back.
Yeah, New York can be tough.
Yeah, had a job and everything, and then that internship at Glossier brought me back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that it's weird because I've gotten a lot of opportunities through just being present and being myself. Because you can get caught up in New York.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of things happening. There's a lot of people doing amazing work, and you can get caught up. So for me, it was really important to, like, stay true to myself and, like, be present and dress in a way that made me feel good. And that's kind of how all my opportunities have come my way. because I don't have a traditional fashion background. Like, most stylists, or to even be deemed as such, you have to have, like, an internship at a, you know, fashion publication, whether that be Vogue, Teen, like, whatever that is. Or you have to intern under, like, someone, or, you know, a really big, like, known whatever, or you have to go to art school. Like, there's all these steps that I couldn't afford to do, to be honest. Like, my family was like, that's cute, no, like, in what world? When I moved here, I was very much in a situation where I had to be financially independent. So I just couldn't afford to take that traditional path. So it's really been me trying to hustle in, like, my off hours, and prove to people that I actually know what I'm doing. It was a lot of self-learning. No one told me.
But that's, like, I mean, so many, you know, first, I think the first generation experience is, like, very specific.
Yes.
And
especially, like, not even just a non-traditional
career. Yeah. And
non-traditional career. Not even just fashion. Yeah.
Yeah, but any, like, creative medium, you know, like, nobody.
No one.
I mean, in my case, nobody was standing there like, do this, you have to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, forging your own path, as corny as it sounds, like, we're, it's really, that's what it's about. You know, figuring it out. And like you said, failing forward.
A lot of failing forward. A lot of failing forward. Yeah. And it's funny because my close friends that have known me forever, like, they were all concerned in that, like, you know, like, what's Ruby doing? Like, is she gonna be okay? Like, we trust her, we believe in her, but, like, you know, like, what's the end goal? And I didn't even know the end goal. I still, to a degree, couldn't tell you, like, what I'm gonna do and, like, you know, what my ideal job is, per se. Like, I have, like, high-level goals, and kind of whatever leads me there, it leads me there. But they were, I remember they were so concerned. Their families were asking about me.
Oh, my Indians.
My parents had to, like...
Be like, nosy, though. I mean, it's concerned, but also, like, nosiness.
Right. So they just want to know. They were all like, oh, you know, what's Reva doing? Or, like, what's Reva up to? And they'd be like, we don't know. They knew. I talked to them every day.
Right. But I mean, they have your back, though, you know?
Right. Like, so they were just, like, it was just funny because they were, everyone was really concerned. Shit, I was concerned. I was stressed out. I was, like, all my friends are, you know, took that job out of school, are, like, making their own money, like, this, that, and the third, like, seem to know what they're doing. And, like, why do I not know what I want? And failed forward so hard, I can't even tell you. To finally figure it out, get into a groove, like, I'm so happy where I'm at right now. And things kind of worked out, not because of coincidence, but because
of you work hard. Yeah.
Intention. I'm also very lucky and privileged, because my family has been very supportive. And I have, like, a strong support system, but yeah, like, I'm good. It worked out.
Yeah. So, you came here, I know you worked with Aniklet, and I saw, I think on your Instagram, you were talking about Ravina.
Yeah. So, this was never intentional, but a lot of my clients and my work is around music, specifically, like, South Asian emerging artists, creatives. So, when I first started, I mentioned my... we did a music video for Kohin Orgasm. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her work. She's also from... She went to school in the Bay, but she's from LA. Her name's Josephine, but she goes by Kohin Orgasm. And we met through a series that we did called Not Your Dulhan way back when. We did this, like, a photography series, me and my friend Pugya. We styled it, shot it. We had an exhibition in Sacramento. And we did, like, an open call for just South Asians that had a story. And Josephine was someone that came forward, and she was pursuing music at the time. So anyways, things fell into place. She wanted to do a music video. We did it. None of us had done that before.
That's dope.
None of us knew what it took, production value. Like, it was just, we were all learning together. And it's totally, like, still, like, to me, iconic, because it was such a beautiful labor of love. So I think through that, I got another opportunity with this artist named Spelling. She's also from the Bay, and we did I FaceTime styled. Like, I remotely styled with my friend Pragya, like, that music video. Then when I moved to New York, I did work with Ravina, and I did work with Anik through, like, random just people knowing people and recommending me. So I have a lot of music videos under my belt, not intentionally per se, but just kind of how it fell into place. But it's been dope. Like, I've learned a lot. I've met a lot of dope people.
What's the kind of work you want to do?
Damn. I don't know if I have a favorite, because they were all, it's like apples and oranges. I think what makes a project really good is the people. So, like, some of my favorite projects have been projects with, like, a really dope team. Usually that's, you know, LGBTQA, POC. Yeah. I've noticed it's usually not paid or paid very, like, less. Those have generally been, like, my passion projects, because I just have free reign. There's, like, no one I need to, like,
answer to.
So it's really just such a creative process. Yeah, I think that for the future, I think I just want to do the same things I've been doing, but at a bigger scale with creatives that I really, like, I guess, with creatives that I really admire. I think that it's been a process to kind of get my foot in the industry and be even known as a stylist. Like, the fact that someone, like, it's still wild to me that people know that I'm a stylist, because I feel like for the longest time it's been categorized as, like, a hobby. So I actually had to correct my family because they were still calling it that.
A hobby?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And I kind of had this moment where I was like, Papa, like, I get paid for this. This is no longer a hobby. This is a job. You know, like, and it's such a small, it's just a word.
And, you know, it's about respect, though,
yeah,
you know?
I think it's about, like, I've worked really hard to be where I'm at. So, like, please just respect that. And it's, like, know that, like, this is a real job that you can get paid for and, like, make money off of. I think that's a big part for them, is, like, they don't think that it's a thing that you can, like, that you can make a living off of.
Yeah.
And it's been a process for them, as it's been for me, to, like, kind of respect that and things. So to me, like, I think it's just now that I've kind of gotten my foot in the door, I'm still learning, I'm still getting better, I'm still kind of figuring it out, but I would love to just work with people that I admire and have teams and, like, be able to kind of do things that we want to do without, get paid to do things that we want to do, but also, like, have these corporations that are tokenizing on diversity and, you know, all these, like, representation and things like that, like, get that, like, scam them into giving us money to just do what we would have been doing. That'd be ideal.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there are, like, more and more radical brown people around now, so.
The community has been just getting bigger. It's still pretty small in the larger scale of things. Like, I feel like if you're a creative, like, you probably know someone or, like, know, you know, it's, like, very, like, second degree of separation from a lot of the people, but it's getting bigger, which is nice, in that, like, more people are pursuing or not scared to pursue creative careers. It's been really dope.
Yeah, it's definitely really exciting. I mean, I was telling you, like, I've been on Instagram and just found this, like, whole community of brown people,
yeah,
who are doing things that brown people weren't doing when I was younger, you know? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. And I think that's, Instagram and the internet has, you know, its flaws.
Yeah, right.
But I think access to knowing that these creatives or whatever exist, especially at a young age, is really nice.
Yeah, and we're showing other Indian kids that there are options, and you can, like, you know, and they're seeing people who look like them do these things that are atypical.
Yeah.
But hopefully will not be.
Right. I think representation, for, like, it's not just about in front of the lens, it's about behind. One of the shoots that we did for Anik is actually in Times Square. I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen pictures of it.
That's dope. I didn't know you did that.
That was surreal. Like, that was crazy.
Yeah, that's really sick.
I hope it's still up. My grandma's visiting. I'd love to show her.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. You could show them the video of Anik showing his parents.
I actually sent that to my family.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really sweet.
That was sweet. Anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'm sorry I was so loud.
It's okay.